You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Hello.
And me, Brian. Right, this week we've got Dragon Ball Super Episode 80. Awaken your sleeping battle spirit. Son Gohan's fight. Dun, dun, dun.
Yep.
And that's the episode. It's his
fight. It sure does happen.
I didn't think he was going to get blinded like straight away.
I thought pretty good opening move. You know?
Solid opening move by the Foxman.
Lavender. Did he get a epithet?
Oh, he... Oh, crap. I feel like he did, but
yeah,
now I can't remember.
Did, yeah. Never mind. Sorry, Lavender. You weren't as memorable as Basil the Kicker.
Well, his name is Basil. Like, come on.
Yeah. So this guy's
also spitting onto your hands is kind of gross.
The hunchback brown fox man who keeps his trousers up with braces. Looks like a sort of a anthropomorphic hillbilly animal.
Well, especially all the filth and the poison and everything. He fights dirty.
Yeah, and so his attack is poison.
Yep, so he just straight up spits in it. Well, he grabs Gohan by the arm and spits in his eyes as his opening move, and then he spits on his hands to punch him and throw
poison
energy
punch.
Balls.
Yeah.
Mm.
At which point in the episode does everyone else learn the what's going to happen in the tournament?
I think straight after after that match, isn't
yeah.
it?
I couldn't remember if it was before it or after it, but yeah. Yeah, so he immediately gets blinded. They were like, oh, throw him a senzu bean because they threw drugs to their competitor in the last match.
Totally legal.
Yeah. And Gohan's like, no, 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 don't do that. I've got this. Even blind, I can beat this guy.
I got to practice. Come on.
And Goku was like, yeah, leave him be. You know, he's been out of the loop for quite a while now. He needs to get back on his feet again, back in form, even though it's just the middle of like a fight. But it's only an exhibition match. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but those guys seem to be playing for keeps. So.
Yeah, Lavender particularly is like, I'm going to kill him.
Well, there's no rule against it right now, so yeah.
Yeah, so this poison will eventually rot his body.
Yeah.
Turn him a nice shade of purple.
Yeah, and Gohan figures if he can, since he can't detect ki, as we've established.
He uses other senses to listen for his movements.
Listen for his footsteps. He's trying to throw you off with his voice, that kind of thing.
And so, yeah, he beats him up on a while using that tactic. Then Lavender goes, well, I see what he's doing. I'll fly.
Yeah, and he's initially like, I can't hear his footsteps. Like, what do you think is happening? Gohan, come on. Think about it.
So then he turns his Super Saiyan into a sonar.
Echolocation.
Yes.
Some kind of thing, which it wasn't just... He's kind of turned it on, and then he knew he was going. I couldn't figure out, can he kind of like hear better now? Can he like hear his heartbeat or something like that? But no, they just like apparently bouncing his energy waves off of him.
Well, so, I figured like he's radiating waves of it out. So the thing that is nearby that is like you can see how far your ki is going out, if that kind of makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You can see how far his own glow, as they keep calling it. Because they're all like, oh, so what? You're glowing now. Whatever. They're not very impressed.
People from that universe can raise their power levels.
I think, yeah, that's that, and that comes in kind of key later on when, no pun intended, where they're to give the guys, I guess, a fighting chance when we find out what the stakes are in this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we also learned that because he's boosted his metabolism though as Super Saiyan, it means he's going to get poisoned quicker.
Yeah. So he has to kind of end the fight real quick. He's like you said, now he's going purple.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing of he kind of wins because he's the last man standing, but the angel kind of comes down too late and is like, oh, they're both knocked out.
Yeah. I kind of figured that Gohan would need to either lose this one or it'd be a tie game because that's to get him. Because he just kind of got drafted into this almost at the last minute. So I was like, yeah, he's probably a little bit. Probably a little bit punchy. Like he needs to get back up to his fighting form again, like Krillin did. So this began to make him realize, oh yeah, I'm not really up to scratch at the moment, so I better get in shape for the real tournament happening, whatever that is.
I don't know what I was kind of expecting from Dragon Ball, but I was kind of hoping Gohan would win and then Goku would lose, because it's like if their strongest guy loses, it's like, oh shit, he might be in a bit of trouble.
But no, as we learn, they will be in a bit of trouble if he loses, because it turns out Universe 9 are the weakest universe.
And Universe 7 is the second
from the bottom.
Which is like, but they beat Universe 6 in a tournament.
You know what that is?
What's that?
Because they say this is the average power level across the rainbows. That's fucking like Yamcha and Chouts and all those guys fucking dragging the average down. numbers for everybody.
Okay, yeah.
It may just be their humans dragging it down, because Universe 6 didn't have any humans.
That's true, actually. Yeah, maybe Earth just makes you look like a feral weakling. Or maybe Beerus is just... The Fat Beerus is not very good at finding the strong guys in his universe.
So it's a draw. They give the Senzu Bean to Gohan, so they don't have to go looking for Dragon Balls again and waste an episode. And then we get the reveal of these are the stakes, but not all 12 of you are going to be involved. And we also take the heat off Goku. In fact, if anything, Goku has saved one universe from destruction.
Yeah, like basically. It's just given what's the guy who's like two kings of the universe now?
Zeno.
Zeno was going to clean house anyway, because most of these universes kind of suck. I mean, like, do we need 12? That's a bit crazy.
Need Universe 9 with the inferior dog men? Probably not.
What are you talking about? Those guys are great. Some of them wear pants, some don't. It's a nice universe. But so I think who's exempt from it? Universe 1?
Universe 1 and 12 and 8.
And 5, is it?
I think it's a nerd that add up.
And it's like, what's the shit about fun? Like, you know, didn't know there would be like seeded teams in the whole inter-universe like tournament here. This is kind of bullshit, if you ask me.
Well, otherwise there has to be like, it has to be a three-way dance for the final.
Okay.
Or you'd have to give people lots of buys. I'm sure, and also this means at some point they'll get to fight those people from those other universes.
They're not going to waste all their universes in one thing, because again, they need to take this to another level.
Yeah,
and they're already establishing. Yeah, these guys are so much better. They already get exempt from being destroyed.
So it was a clever way of taking the heat off Goku.
Yeah, yeah. So he's still kind of to blame though, because he brought it up.
Yeah. But they were going to kill everybody anyway.
They might have forgotten. They seem very distractible.
But they wouldn't have even known about it. Or does this happen one day?
Yeah, I guess that's true as well.
You were alive and then you weren't.
And Beerus gives your fella a bit of a yelling at, doesn't he?
Oh, they start giving out to each other. That's great. It's like, oh, you're always like, oh, we have to let them develop naturally. And he's like, you're fucking sleeping half the time, dude. Yeah, and you get to see the other Kai from Universe 9 freak out. That is like, wait a minute, we're the weakest? Oh, shit. Yeah.
They also learn that, oh, yes, the Kais and the Gods of Destruction will also be extinguished. Only the angels get to survive.
Well, I guess they're all related, so... Yeah. It'd be kind of weird if you wiped out your cousin or something.
Which Beerus is not happy about, and Whis is very smug. About
Whis and Bados are both like kind of like
Oh well, gotta find a new job after this.
this was a good setup, and it looks like next episode the blue guy grows really, really tall
or shrinks Goku, which I'm hoping is what happens.
Would be that as well, yes.
Either way, it'll be fine, because Goku has done this a number of times before.
Yeah, it's not his first Baron dance of fighting a giant guy.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. Again, really good looking episode. There's parts where it kind of drops, but it kind of keeps it up for most of the fight.
I try it's pretty solid all the way through.
And just kind of guy standing in the background, completely unanimated kind of thing. But, you know, you got to put your budget where you need it.
Yeah, but just like the... giving Gohan that little handicap from the first second of the fight made it a bit more interesting, a bit more tactically dynamic than just, you know, to punch him until he falls down.
Yeah, and it didn't feel as bad of him, like, you don't feel like, oh, Gohan, way to fuck it up, because it's like you crippled him from the start of the fight kind of thing. So, yeah, it doesn't feel like a bad loss, if you get me.
It's like, ah, I didn't know we were doing poison breath now. Where this knee kept you like Frieza did in that last saga, and from just take a bush to put your legs out with a laser beam and straight off.
Right. On to the shorts. Shonen Ishibe, Go Go Gomachan, episode 32. Let's go see Sugao-kun.
Yay!
I thought for like a minute that Sugao wasn't going to have a miserable life. His whole life. It had me hoping.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
So like they get to go to see Sugao-kun, and like granddad is like Ishibe has organized a company trip. You know, all expenses paid to go and visit to what's it? The Republic of
I keep forgetting the goddamn name.
Eskinule. Yeah.
That sounds close.
Yeah, I shall try and remember to write it down this week. There's a few. I've been on the holiday, so I haven't written some important things down like that and some names of characters from Ninja Girl and Samurai Master.
So most of the company are kind of wondering why the fuck they're there, but his grandpa keeps giving them incentives to, he'll triple their pay maybe
they got lost in the woods. So, hey, I heard the boss say if first person to like get us out of this jam is going to like get a double pay. Is that right, sir? Yeah. No, triple pay. Let's find a way to get out of this hole.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Sugao is like so excited. Actually, he got introduced by that freaking Japanese tourist again.
Yes.
They sent him back to Japan.
Yes, yeah. And again, the parent was freaked out when this guy just comes up and hugs his son.
Yeah, you kind of would be. It's like, oh, it's you again. This isn't weird. Right.
But yeah, as they get lost, Sugao decides he's got to go and find them. So heads out with, and the mum's like, "No, you'll just get lost again." And yet he's sulking because he's no longer the center of attention.
And his master is trying to steal snacks that that they brought because he's just being a general hobo, I think.
Yeah,
also he's trying to flog like knockoff.
He is
Ishibe.
He's trying to make his own Ishibe. Merchandise.
Yeah, they actually passed it in America. It's like, look, Ishibe, this wooden doll is a lot like you. It's like, what? I don't see it, actually.
Good stuff.
So Sugao-kun and his dagger lost in the woods. No, man, just for the goal is like, you know, don't worry, honey. We got a map, we got a compass, we got everything we need to, you know, find a way to the woods and get back home. Cut to, well, this didn't work out, and we're lost in the woods.
It's like, oh yeah, you're one of the worst dads.
Oh well. The scariest part of the woods too is got the benevolent purple haze like floating around it.
Oh yeah.
Right, and that's that pond where all the sea monsters are, or lake monsters even. And so like, they arrive at the house, and you know, and it's like, sorry we're late. Like, what's your cow gonna want to say hello to that guy? It's like, oh well, they want to have to find you. You know, I'm sure you'll be back in a minute now. Maybe you guys just want to come inside and just sit down for a bit. I said, oh okay. And they wait and wait, and you have tea, and you have to have a little bit of dinner. Even it's like, Skalkun's still not back, and.
Well, this was only a day trip, so we have to go.
We have to go. We gotta get our phone. If we don't get down, we're late for our plane. And like Ishibe is crestfallen. It's like, oh, I came all this way, and I'm gonna see Sugao-kun. And Gomachan picks up on this and starts crying as well, and grabs onto the table leg. And is like, you didn't want to go, Gomachan? I don't want to go either. I want to see Sugao-kun. Sob, sob, sob. Shuka, shuka, shuka.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of the reversal there. And Yeti has to be convinced to try and find Sugao.
Like, come on, Yeti, you don't even want to do this now. You're the only guy who can go into the woods and not get lost. Come on.
He's been sulking the entire episode because Sugao's real best friend has come to see him.
Come on, do it for him. Do it for little Sugao-kun. Like, roar, he runs off.
Yeah. And yeah, still doesn't work out because Sugao can never be happy entirely.
Yeah, so he has to fly off, but he sees Sugao's campfire, and then Sugao sees his plane, and they did see each other somehow.
They felt each other's friendship.
They sent each other's key. across the millions of miles, they sent each other a present.
They should have put a big stick up, and then they'd be able to see it.
And I think, is this the first time Sugawa says anything besides Sabu Sabu Sabu?
I think might be. If he said that before, it must have been in the first episode, because since then he's just been crying constantly.
This is your life now.
He does live in the terror dimension, so you'd be crying all the time as well.
Well, yeah, sometimes when he's not crying, he tends to have like a very determined look on his face, but he doesn't say anything else.
Yeah. You can kind of like mutter a thing of a positive or negative affirmative.
He's baby Kaiji, the suffering pariah, the ultimate survivor.
And as we learned this week, we got even more of it coming.
Yep. It's like they're just renewed entirely, aren't they? Just continuing on.
Keep on doing stuff.
Fantastic.
Mm.
And there's no Olympics or World Cup to interrupt it this year.
Trying to keep up with its own schedule, I suppose, yeah.
Unless to take a break off for the Women's Rugby World Cup.
Quite possibly, yes. Okay, on to Bono Bono episode 33. Dad likes to go on journeys, in which Bono Bono's dad decides he's going to have a look to see what's under those two clouds over there.
And this is kind of, I guess, explains where his father is most of the time.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to go there.
Because we get a flashback to some earlier journeys where he went to see a tree, a tall tree on a mountainside. When he got to it, he stuck a tall stick up next to it so he could have a look at it from when he was far away. But you can still see the tall tree.
Yeah, and someone knocked down the stick soon after, so he went back to put it back up. But it was knocked down sooner after, so he probably pissed someone off.
Yes. And so Bono decides to follow his dad and assumes that, well, first, what does he see? Oh, he sees something being, looks like something's dragged into the water.
Yeah, some kind of trash into the ocean. It's like, huh, what's all this about? Okay, and he goes in for a swim, and he just runs back out going, no.
I thought he was crying, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, crying as well, crying and wailing, and it's like Bono assumes, probably pissed somebody off again now.
Yeah. Just interfering with someone's day.
Yeah, he goes to get a new forest he hasn't been to before, and he says, "Hello, friend, I've never been to this forest before. Can you tell me what everything is like around here?" I said, "Oh, yeah, sure. I lived around my life. I can show you around." It's like, "What's this flower called?" "Oh, yeah, I've seen that before." "Yeah, what's it called, though?" "I don't know. I pass it every day, but, you know, I've seen it before." It's pretty nice, isn't it?
Well, the mistake he makes is like, "Do you know that bird?" "Yes, I know that bird. I've seen this before." "Do you know this flower?" "Yeah, I've seen that flower before."
"I've seen it many times."
"Do you know this pond?" "Yeah, I know that pond."
He's like, "Well, thank you for your time."
Like, "No, it's pond in the back of my hand."
"I can't give you any more information."
He tries to roll down a hill to see if it's fun. It does not look like fun. And then he runs up towards a rock and climbs on the rock. That looks a bit more fun.
Yeah, and you see his reaction to this of just kind of walking away bruised and walking away pretty happy with himself.
He decides to have a rest, wonders how he should sit. Bono's following him, but now he's run out of things to hide behind, so he decides to put on a disguise. And immediately his dad turns around and goes, "Oh, hello, Bono."
Well, it's such an elaborate disguise that he stands out in the kind of empty plane that they're in.
Yeah, well, if you turned around, you know, you could have maybe pretended to be a shrub or a bush. You know, if anything, to see this like this thing growing spontaneously in the middle of this empty meadow, like, probably stand out.
And how does it end? Yeah. I can't remember.
We've come all this way. It's getting late today, so we'll just have a rest tonight, and we'll go home tomorrow.
That was
okay. Good night, Dad. Good night, Bono. No, that's not quite right. No.
He very loudly tries to figure out how to lie down.
Which way do I rest? Ah, there we go. I'm asleep now.
I don't think there's a deep meaning in this one. I think it's like parents are just as weird as you.
Yes. They weren't on any heavy shit like they were last week. But I do like the mystery of, like, what on earth did he see in the water?
Like, it's something that scared him, that someone gave out to him. Yes. We're not entirely sure.
The great old ones.
Right. A double bill, because I forgot to watch it last week. Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 20, My Little Sister, and episode 21, Someday I Want to Be the Shogun.
Don't we all?
Okay, so in 20, Oichi
Yes.
Nobunaga's little sister is betrothed to Azai Nagamasa.
Because they need to make a pact with that place in order to pass through it so they can take over another place. Or so they can have contact with another place.
Yep.
And he's a super buff dude.
He is, yes.
He's flexing out of his shirts.
And they're really baggy shirts, so you'd think he wouldn't have a problem with it, but he's quite ripped. And she's into that, according to her letters back to her brother. That's totally her type. She's totally his type. So it's all working out, except Nobunaga's been kind of jealous, I guess.
Yes.
He starts doing press-ups.
Oh, yeah. Well, I watched it like 2 weeks ago now. Just that might have happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it takes us to around 1564.
Okay.
For those keeping track, I think that's where we are.
I'm trying to remember if anything else happened in the episode of Nord.
No, I can't remember either. I just remember the key figures who were introduced more than
the gags with them. Yeah, sure. Oh, I think there's a conversation between her and Nobunaga's wife of like, okay, if we go to war, like, what side do I take? And she's like, follow your heart's desire. And it's just like, okay, that's not really helpful. But
I get the feeling that the character designs aren't going to age either.
Yeah. Like, okay, in historical terms, how young is Nobunaga's sister?
In this episode, she's 15 or 16.
Right.
No, sorry, 16 or 17. She was like 13 when the series started.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because everyone's really upset that she's getting married. Because they're all really into that.
There was a style back then, Dwayne.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's history.
Yeah,
there's worse things to come if they carry on all the way through.
That's the thing. Yeah, worse things happen.
Particularly to Oichi's husband and his son from a previous marriage. And the character who's going to do that appalling thing is like the character you could not imagine doing at this point in time in the show. So it's
no.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, how far are they willing to take this?
Well, the more grim portent of things to come at the end of the next episode.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yes.
Then the next episode we get to meet Ashikaga Yoshiaki, the wandering shogun, and who's been looked after by Akechi Mitsuhide.
Yep.
Our future murderer of Oda Nobunaga and apparently the straight man of the show.
Yeah.
I can follow him. It's like to say this guy is always very straightforward things. Probably has no friends, but he gets a job done, I suppose. Seeing all this, he's going out the door because, I'm sick of working for these guys. I'm going to go up for Oda Nobunaga, who's got a bit more of ambition and kind of class.
He's dealing with a giant man, baby.
Uh-huh. Yes. But he's a previous show his younger brother, so even though he's probably, I don't know, in his 30s or 40s, he's still the younger brother, so he's got to act that way.
Yes. Yeah, like, I mean, literally rolling on the floor having a tantrum. But, yeah.
Yep, so it'll be interesting to see.
How far they take it.
How far they go, because this is also has been given.
Been renewed.
Another season.
Well, it's so informative.
It is, yes.
Maybe it'll show us what really happened, you know. Maybe Nobunaga did escape that fire in the temple. He wasn't murdered. He actually did get to escape into Drifter's world and then pick up the slack from there.
So wait, it's going to like recap Drifters in that style? Okay. Yeah,
I'd do that as well. That would be great.
Or it'll be all the branching timelines where like Nobunaga became all those different things in anime, such as an evil demon lord.
Oh, or where he was in Onimusha. Yeah.
A gun.
Nice.
Yeah, so basically these two episodes introduce new characters who Nobunaga will eventually turn on. So, and one character who will eventually turn on at Nobunaga.
What do you mean? Nobunaga's so honorable and he would never betray anybody.
Yeah, I'm wondering if like the kind of things of Chidori being like battle weary in the fucking intro and stuff are kind of like, is that showing that she'll kind of fall out of favor with this kind of thing?
Yeah,
she has worked for other people.
Her master will eventually be on the opposite side of Nobunaga.
Well, yeah. They were pretty much, so, I would say, hinting at that, if not straight up saying it. Yeah.
So we shall see. Yes, they may end up being on opposite sides.
Mm.
Maybe it turned really dramatic later in the day.
A couple more decapitations then, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to now talk about Haybot, episode 22. I don't know the title because Crunchyroll put the wrong title on it. They put the title from two episodes ago.
Maybe Haybot is doing that on purpose, just to mess with you.
Quite possibly. Mm. Anyway, this was an amazing episode. It was all about... Okay, get this. So, that involved... The main plot was unused pre-production characters from Haybot had been enslaved... the promise of being coloured in and made into real characters as motivation.
Okay.
All right.
So then it turns out it's a plot from by the Saturn Hag again. They defeat her in a battle. All but one of the pre-production characters turns back into paper versions of like the actual pre-production sketches, having been saved, supposedly, from enslavement, and then Neijiru and Haybot shred them, as that's proper material.
Oh, God.
Should allow this pre-production material to get outside of the company. And then the one character who didn't get turned into back into paper watched on as the L2 heroes murdered all these characters.
Oh, Jesus.
Lovely.
Also, two new characters showed up, one who looks like Neijiru and one who looks like Haybot, except slightly cooler. Yeah. No, they look the same age.
Oh.
There was also the woman who was in the future, was like observing, like seemed to be like a timeline, which was like a double helix, like a screw, and talking about singularities again. And then we saw a battle between the villain and hero from that very first episode, but they like faded in and out. Both of them did, but both of them faded out to be Neijiru. So he appears to be both the hero and the villain.
So he's fighting an alternate version of himself?
Possibly, yes. Mm. In this alternate version of himself.
Yes.
I still don't know quite what's going on. Hopefully next episode, where apparently Haybot dies, will explain it some more.
Robots can't die.
And this other robot who's unlike Haybot, who farts all the time, this new main character Haybot, whose name I forget, pisses himself all the time.
Oh, that's much better.
Anyway.
It's like you say about an alternate timeline where the hero becomes a villain as well at the same time, and then also a robot farts and pisses himself all the time.
Yeah, you see... sometimes you say a thing and it's like, maybe I should watch Haybot. And then you describe anything else about Haybot and I'm like, oh, that's right.
By the way, diarrhea happens.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Oh, I've got Total Lost Village on this now. This is going to be my top 10 best anime of 2017.
Excellent.
Now, because the stuff with the pre-production characters is really clever and funny. Mm.
It is a good idea. Are
there like unfinished ideas or like
not
fully
like
thought out?
Two characters are like... pre-production versions of Neijiru, so one's like a very bland version of him and one's like an adult man.
We'll see what works best in the pitch.
And the other thing is like the knockoff Haybot from a few episodes ago, the one who survived, has created like a self-help book and video which these pre-production characters are following to try and there's like I'm a knockoff and I made it big, I made all this money. You too can be like me, you don't have to be an official character to be a success.
You could be number two.
You could,
and also make a poop joke about that.
Yes.
That's the Haybot way.
I think they snuck a poop joke into this episode as well.
That seems likely.
Yeah.
Snuck it in. No, I have like front and center.
I think it was snuck in. I think it was like a blink and you miss it poop joke.
Okay.
Because I think it was this episode where he didn't want to use the snake Vokabot, who looks like poop when he's curled up, coiled up, because he thought it was poop.
Right.
So, yeah. There you go. Farts, poop, and piss. What more could you want at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning?
Kind of figured you need to go to Maston to kind of purify yourself after watching that.
Yeah, sure.
Right, on to more wholesome things. Oh, maybe not. Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, Episode 7. Summer's Staples, the fan service episode, frankly.
Yes.
Not as fan service-y as you'd think, because that's only the first half, I guess, the beach episode.
This is the beach, and it's relatively okay, but you're still getting more of Kessel-Kawadl and that poor young lad who... It's kind of capped it when this was one. The poor fucker's named Shota, so his fate was determined to begin with.
Wait, what's the thing with that?
There's sort of a subset of you have like the lolicon thing, or it's like the small girls. The Shotokan thing is with small boys, and usually an older woman.
Okay.
Yeah. So he is what he's named for, unfortunately.
All right. Oh, dear.
Besides the very uncomfortable scenes of him getting oiled up by Quetzalcoatl, the rest of the episode was pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one bit kind of was like, I don't like looking at this. But then they go, hey, let's go fishing on the back of the dragon. And I'm like, yes, that's more fun.
This is kind of nice. You know, let's have a race in the water and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was nice as well because the second half then said to go to. I didn't even know there was a comic kit in the summer. I thought it was just a winter thing.
No, there's two a year.
Yeah.
So one is more hellish than the other.
At least the other one you can wrap up for, I suppose, yeah.
Instead of go there, because they got asked by Kobe, actually, like, workmate, if they'd help him out and sit on this thing, might help, like, work the desk and, drive people towards that, towards the desk, towards the line where...
Just sort out the lines and that kind of thing, yeah. So, I mean, they're not there, they're there for business kind of thing. So you get to see it from that point of view.
Yeah. Fafnir is there because I guess he's caught this otaku bug and he's about to get his own magazine, but it seems to be full of like blasphemous curses.
Yeah, so. Actual curses. That was my favorite gag.
Curses that you could curse people to death with.
Yes.
Functional curses and no like to the point where they're blurred out.
Yeah, no one's buying.
Yeah, because they're all buying different kinds of filth.
No boobs in this.
Yeah, he's very disappointed.
Yeah.
He's into the otaku thing, but he hasn't quite figured out why people are into it.
And we discover that some cosplayers are also other monsters who've traveled to Earth.
Because it's the one day of the year, not Halloween, where they could totally just walk around and no one would question them.
Yeah, well, it's kind of nice. And then, like, kind of in the last episode as well, where it's like, I guess... The other kind of dragons seem to be like taking to this realm a bit more quickly than Toru is. So she feels a little bit kind of stuck between worlds. But now when she goes to this thing, it's like, I can kind of let my wings and tail out a bit, and I can feel actually I feel a lot more comfortable now. I feel a bit more at ease with myself. So I kind of I can enjoy the kind of facilities and kind of pleasures of this world, but also feel a bit. More of my own skin as a dragon. So it was a nice little compromise that they arrived at.
And then obviously, people want to take pictures of the cosplayer.
Yes.
The dragon maid.
That's so original. I never would have thought of that. Wow. And our best gag, I think, of the whole episode was that Kana keeps like, approaching this small creatures in the wild and just eating them. Like we see her on the beach, she's kind of poking at a crab and then there's gobbles it up in one go.
Yeah, I thought that was a good like cutaway kind of gag where that's like her summer homework, isn't it? To catch bugs and stuff and classify them, and she's classifying grasshopper crunchy, And I'm just like,
she goes out to see the cicada and she's there with the net ready to go, and she goes okay, she grabs it. Oh no!
Yeah, it's a pretty good gag.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it was a bit funnier than last week's, but it's losing its appeal for me.
Maybe they don't have much more steam left in themselves, yeah.
Well, there's a new character next week, so...
Yeah. Yeah, they've been holding off on her for ages. It's bizarre. Like, they go into the sea, they mention specifically sea monsters, and I'm like, well, surely she'll show up this episode, right?
No. you'd expect that, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I think I was warned some time ago when it started, and it was like, someone kind of told me this type of one thing. Yeah, the comic all starts out pretty good, but it kind of gets into a rut after a while, so it's maybe a whole true from the TV show as well.
Okay. Yeah, as I said last week, it kind of felt a bit like they had a great idea to begin with and were surprised that they were allowed to keep making the comic and had to come up with some new ideas quite quickly.
I've got a new idea for a comic. All right. Your last 15 didn't work. What is it? It's a dragon who's a maid. Oh. What else are you going to do with that? There are other dragons. Yeah. And they're also maids?
Decide whether his partner lives or dies.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. Is there much left of episodes of this? Or
it'll do 13 at least, wouldn't it?
I'll say 12 or 13, yeah. That's my That's my guess.
Yeah, hopefully it won't drop too much in that time.
I find like the little comic aside, I will say, just the little quick bits before it goes to the ad break or the next section, like, such as Kenna doing some homework and eating the bugs, or they buy fireworks, and it's like, dragon fire, sounds awesome. It's like, what? This is bullshit. I can do better on this watch.
Yeah, I think we were saying that before. Like, the earlier episodes managed to maintain that kind of... because they were broken up into little bits, they managed to maintain that kind of pace, okay? But I wonder if these ideas would be better compressed into, like, shorts, you know?
Yeah, well, from what I was reading, some of these, the beach one at least, had got stuff stretched out, which wasn't in the original comic, so...
Right, yeah.
We shall see, or I'll give up watching it, and you two can see. Right.
Gotten this far, I think I'll just finish it out.
Yeah. Okay, next up, Time Bokan 24, episode 21. Versailles was actually a blank centre.
Shopping centre?
Fashion centre.
It was TK Maxx.
That's what I figured they were going for. Yeah.
Marie-Antoinette found a TK Maxx.
Yeah, so I thought it was more like H&M or Uniqlo. But yes, it is that... I didn't think it was as budget as TK Maxx. I thought it was like mid-budget like that. But
I thought it was lower because of the way everyone was like, I'm not wearing that.
Because they're very high-class French noble women. They only want really expensive things that Bimaggio can sell them. So yes, they go. So Bimaggio's trying to sell her fashions in the future.
They're just having a yard sale, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
No one wants to buy them.
Because her style is like so... I don't know, 2030s or something.
Yes, and Tokyo is like getting ready to buy his own clothes for the very first time.
Those clothes his mom didn't buy for him.
Yes.
Yeah, but he hasn't really been given much to work with.
But he got 500 yen. He could probably buy at least a t-shirt and pennies for that much.
Okay.
What's Callan in disguise as in the fashion in the clothes shop?
She was in disguise when they went... Well, wait, maybe she was.
No, she was, because he says it's fat, and turns out she's inside whatever he says.
Oh, yeah, she was disguised as like a it was like the...
An
the
inverse colored one of the parakeet, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was it, yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's kind of like a fat parrot, but a bit bigger and fatter. Yeah. Who you got?
And she just assumes everyone's calling her fat the whole episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then they go back to France, because there's true history in Versailles with Marie Antoinette. And they meet Marie Antoinette, and she is working at this fashion centre that she's set up. And she can't get any customers, partly because they don't want to spend... They think her clothes are rags because they're so cheap, but also because she insults every single person who comes into her shop.
Like, a lot of people have come into your shop, are looking at the clothes and holding it up, and it goes like, you can't wear that because vertical stripes will make you fatter than you are. And it's like, motherfucker, you're an awful saleswoman.
Yeah, it's like the Arabella Weir character, the makeup saleswoman in the Fast Show, who just tells people that, oh no, you won't be able to wear that makeup.
That's such like a comedy trope that I think there must be like loads of people who just do that, right?
Oh, I'm pretty sure there are, yeah.
Okay.
But besides her salesmanship, like the clothes are quite nice. Like even gets Tokyo to try on the dress, and he loves it.
Yeah, yes. He's wearing it the whole rest of the episode, isn't he?
He becomes drunk on his own cuteness.
It's nice, though. He's trying out a different kind of thing, and it's working for him.
Yep.
I mean, it's probably because like he was wanting to buy his own clothes earlier on, and then Karen said, oh, Tokyo, no matter what clothes you wear, you'll still always be Tokyo. And it's like, huh, wait a minute.
Is that a dig or is that a compliment?
Then Bimaggio shows up, and Marie Antoinette gets her age wrong and basically insults what she's wearing. So therefore, forget trying to correct the history. This means
sure
war.
That bitch was what's wrong.
So she becomes a high fashion designer, I guess.
Yes, by dressing people in crazy anime clothes.
Yeah, yeah. Ridiculous tall hair, that kind of thing.
Would you say specifically they look like Hunter Hunter characters?
Some of them do. Some of them look like Killua's family. His mother in particular, who has like kind of the long frock and the Cyclops visor. But
oh, yeah, there was someone with a fucking Cyclops thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so they got crazy anime clothes, crazy anime hair, because they basically have like a one upsmanship of who can have the tallest haircut.
Yeah.
It's all a scam, though. All these like fancy designs are made out of paper, but it doesn't really matter because it's going to come back and buy into the new lineup anyway tomorrow, so they'll just change it to that. So it's a foolproof scheme. Yeah.
Mm.
Then Marie Antoinette's mother shows up. Then everyone's clothes fly.
Not just yeah. They try to have like a fashion show with Marie Antoinette and Karen and stuff. But hey guys, these clothes are pretty good. Not bad, huh? No. These are awful. But and then Omarosh shows up and saying, "Well, this is what we're wearing in Vienna." And by the way, Maria, I brought you all these like suitors for you to try. I was like, "Oh yes, hello. We love Marie Antoinette. She looks so lovely in those clothes." But they just here. And then just at that moment, the paper clothing just kind of tears to pieces like then and there. Jiggers up, and it's like, oh, screw trying to like make it my money making scheme. Let's just turn, let's get a big robot going, let's break the whole joint again. That could be always really weak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they get a fountain mecha, and then they make a super cute housewife mecha to fight it. But really, the sun robot is the one who does the fighting.
Yeah, the sun robot isn't even part of the combination. It's just there.
That's what's best about it.
I know.
Just runs around being a little shit.
Yep, that's what wins it.
I'll throw these stones at that fountain. I've got my finger stuck in the fountain.
Let me out.
Oh, dear. I guess it's not so much her being a super cute housewife. It's her being an awful mother robot that wins the day.
Yes, and then Bimaggio's fantasy is a parody of Rose of Versailles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't think of the name of it when it was going on. Yeah.
It's like they've got to get one in there somewhere.
Oh, I was waiting for it to happen, and then it eventually did.
I enjoyed this despite some really lousy drawings in places in this episode.
Yeah. Kind of drawings in lieu of jokes.
And then I have to say, how much I enjoyed it was then totally wiped out by the hype I've got for next week's episode, which has an anime Stanley Kubrick in it.
Yeah. It's about faking the moon landings.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy. This is ripe for material. I'm quite looking forward to it as well.
Maybe that's what they want you to think they're doing, because there also appears to be cannons involved. They seem to be putting Neil Armstrong in a cannon at one point. Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, yeah, that is definitely a caricature of Stanley Kubrick.
Well, wasn't there like a famous director supposedly involved?
Yeah, Kubrick was the one who was supposed to be involved.
Was he the guy? Yes.
Yeah. Because of 2001, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah, they go full bore on their conspiracy theories in this show.
Well, I'll show you the true history, man. This is how it actually is. This is what the fucking government doesn't want you to know.
Maybe it's going to be the same as last time, and all the conspiracies are true simultaneously.
Go back to like one of the presidential elections, you know, and so JFK was actually a blank lizard man.
Yeah, maybe that's for the last few episodes when they know they're coming to an end, they'll just get crazier and crazier.
Mm. What I have mentioned before is like, you know, well, we'll wait for to just show spam with the PDA, but that hasn't happened yet, so we're just going to keep on going until they say no.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I don't know. Let's check in on Dwayne, because Dwayne's obviously the guy who likes this least, as far as I can tell.
No, like, it just sometimes I kind of fall in and out of it, but mostly it's fairly harmless. Like, when it, at best, like you said, I was kind of like, yeah, this episode's okay. And then the housewife and son robot showed up, and I was like, okay, this is pretty good again. When it's on, it's really good.
Yeah, I was like a bit worried because some of the drawings were really rough early on, but once they got into Bimaggio's crazy fashions and Tokyo drunk on his own cuteness, then
yeah, that was good too.
I was more on board. And the Rose of Versailles things are nice. was nicely done, I thought. Probably where they spent the most time on the episode. Right, on to the final comedy of the week. Classicaloid, episode 20, Mozart is the Name. It feels like it ought to be something like Pranking is the Game after that.
Being an asshole all
the time. Fill in your rhyme here, kids. You know, it's play at home fun.
So, this episode, Mozart is annoying.
Yeah.
He's acting up.
He's pranking everyone. That's not even like pranking. It's just like... some of it doesn't even make any kind of sense. He's just being cruel for the sake of it.
Yeah, like put a skeleton in Lee's wardrobe so his character was going to have a bit more. Yeah, it makes sense.
Mm.
Drawing a Beethoven's face and then drawing on Hershey and then just drawing on the walls and stuff. It's quite up to the same level of creativity as putting a skeleton in the wardrobe.
It's not really a joke. It's more vandalism, you know.
Yeah.
I think by the end of the episode, we're supposed to think this is like it's the nature of a child prodigy. It's someone who's been praised so much at a young age and was so talented at a young age and got away with so much stuff at a young age that.
Yeah,
this is
that
just
you're
how
supposed
he's going
to kind of accept it.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Lapping so much, he starts farting, you know. Yes. Like, how old is this clone supposed to be? I don't know.
A grown-ass man, at least, yeah.
Mm. And apparently he was a big, well, I don't know, a big prank player, but he did play pranks, including pranks inside his compositions.
What, like stick a fart in there or something?
No, well, there's like some pranks which are like pranks on the audience, I think. So there's like fake endings and things. There was something else I read about. This was a brief cursory glance this morning on Google. About a composition which makes it, which is really hard to play because your hands are so far apart on the piano.
So forcing people to play things that are difficult.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. It gets so much that they just impose like a ban on him playing any pranks.
Well, it's like if he does one more prank, he won't get fed.
Yeah.
No dinner.
No. But then they cut away then to like if I wake up in the morning and like oh how do you do can I oh please to see you Beethoven isn't a wonderful day today it's like all having like a lovely time
they're all wearing fabulous clothes
yes and then Schubert's saying so that's what life would be like one here if we just fed Mozart to a tiger and it's like Schubert we can't do that. A tiger is way too expensive. You can't possibly afford it if we're going to do a plan like that. So we've got to do something better.
And then they look up how much a tiger would cost. And they're like, yeah, we could probably eventually afford that. We don't even have a cage, Hubert. Come on. Think about it, man. Dear. Yeah, I did like his little fantasy world. Because this show, I mean, like that's a thing that totally could happen.
Yes.
It's like, look, Lisa's going, oh, forgive me, can I? I'm late on the rent this month. And the cat's going, rent? What is this thing you call rent?
It's the perfect world for them, yeah.
Yeah, this felt like a rare episode where Sosuke is the voice of reason.
Yeah, it's he walks in, and obviously he wasn't in the fantasy sequence because nobody likes him. Also, Sosuke doesn't exist in this world. But yeah, and he's kind of like... I don't know, guys. It seems like you're kind of being dicks.
Yeah, just don't follow him around. Just let him go and do what... Just because he's not here annoying you doesn't mean he's up to anything bad.
Yeah. But yeah, Liz has figured that he's definitely committing crimes.
Schubert.
No, it's of course the guy who hates him the most. Yes.
Absolutely, definitely has to be underworld figures involved.
And he does mention to continuity that is a thing they were involved in by accident at one stage.
And so, but then they start getting affected by what do they call it, Mozart panic?
Yeah, something like that. So
it's like an aura of mischief. Yes. So even even though he may not be actively doing anything at the time, anybody in his general radius will fall victim to bad luck, misfortune, mischief, pranks.
And this is explained by Pad, and quite rightly says, he goes, "How do you know this?" And Pad seems really happy that these things are happening to them, and then he gets shat on by a bird.
Yeah. a chunk of like the bridge that they're on, precisely the width of Beethoven, just falls down and he falls into the river.
As he's explaining, this is not a thing that happens in reality. Well, yeah.
Only happens in cartoons.
Yeah.
So then they fight. Canai is the only one who manages to venture on. And finds him watching a kid playing basketball on his own. He's also a child prodigy.
Yeah, he's like in primary school, but you know he's pretty tall for his age. He's pretty good for basketball, but you know he can't get anybody to play with him.
He used to come and play with his friends, but obviously he's really good at practicing layups and all that kind of thing. And obviously no one wants to play with him because he's too good.
Yeah.
So he's obviously seeing himself in this. Yeah.
And then apparently he's going off for a date with a 17-year-old.
It's like, I'm going to see my lover, a 17-year-old. And the cast is divided. It's like, dude, that's really fucked up. Another one's like, good job. Which is really weird.
But it turns out the 17-year-old is himself.
Or a composition he made when he was 17. Yeah.
When he uses music, he turns into a 17-year-old version of himself. And then the episode kind of ends.
Just ends, yeah. I get, but also don't kind of get what they were trying to go for. This
I get what they were trying to go for, but I'm not sure they were successful in it.
Yeah, I think I'm with Dwayne on that. Yeah.
It's absolutely like you said, Brian. It's like, well, he was always praised too much and he was always let go friggin' wild, so it's no wonder he's like an asshole to deal with in everyday life. But it's kind of like, yeah, but fucking grow up a bit, dude.
This is a man who has a Wikipedia page called Mozart and Scatology.
Yeah.
I think we're safe to say Mozart would appreciate Haybot more than you two.
Probably, yeah. Probably.
If he were alive today, what would he make?
He
does seem to be the writer's favorite, because I think more than most, he seems to get more of these kind of episodes, which are about him and his past and how it will, how it's affects this version of him, shall we say.
It seems to be the one they have the most interest in. And it might have been initially from a comedy point of view, but in this one, it's again kind of going into that serious thing like it did before, where he turned into that monster or whatever it was called.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which they reference in this. It's like,
Yeah.
That's the other reason why they're concerned. It's like, has he gone full on bonkers and shagging animals?
There's a concern in this show.
What was the preview for next week?
It's about Schubert, and he's like, he's a guy who is always in the background, not really adding in much, and it seems to be like a storm coming and a guy batting on the hatches, and he's just at one side.
I'm kind of hoping it'll come to the success of the last Schubert episode, which was just amazing. Actually, that was my favorite joke this episode, where Schubert's trying to explain to Canada, it's like, it's going to be okay. We'll get out of this. We'll make it. And he gets taken away by a kite.
Yes.
Pretty good.
He's like, damn you, Mozart!
Because it's really like kind of like action movie guy just getting killed when they're right about to be rescued, kind of the way it's
one day away from retirement.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a pretty good one.
Right, on to our penultimate thing to talk about. It was tough to decide which is the better of these last two things. So, Tiger Mask Double, episode 20, The Gatekeeper of Hell.
I got to say, Brian, you called it on the robots. I was quite wrong.
They're going to turn up sooner or later.
I knew there was practice wrestling robots. I didn't think there was straight up wrestling robots.
Yes, so basically a giant robot, Roman Reigns, shows up in this episode.
Oh, I thought he was trying to be like an Undertaker kind of thing.
Could be. I originally thought Kevin Nash, but he's got like the flak jacket of the Shield, though.
Yeah.
But they make a note of how tall he is without Kevin Nash, surely. He seems to be in his diesel persona.
Is there a wrestler who's pretended to be a robot? Because that's
not
a good
Mecha Mummy. There's various ones. Mecha Mummy is the one which springs to mind. He's the one I'm most familiar with. But he's also not technically a robot. He's a mummy who's a cyborg.
I got that from the name, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so this guy's called Blackout, who the rich bald guy from the previous episode is apparently testing this robot against wrestlers for his company, Capital Dynamo.
So he can sell it to the military?
Yes.
Yes.
Miss X and Mr. X do not look pleased with this. It seems like they're not on board. So presumably it's the third who's the one who's allowed this to happen.
Yeah, I guess he wants to see if he can replace his...
I think did he allow it to happen? Because as we see, like, you know, he is eventually the one who does like suplexes that robot and takes it out immediately. So maybe he thought, yeah, well, robots never really replace wrestlers as long as I'm around. As long as we'll have, because these guys will prove themselves to be superior to this like machine. You know, it isn't like for sort of like grit and determination. Like, oh, these guys can take his dinner.
Yeah, actually, we gotta go back.
But before we get to that, we've got Red Deathmask to take care of.
Well, initially, it's the 2-on-2 between Orton and Billy the Kidman and Kevin and Takuma. Man, Kevin's fast becoming my like favorite character on this show.
Yeah, he had tag rope, but he just goes straight for Billy Kidman and starts to garrote him with it.
Yeah. That's the right way to go. If it's a no holds barred kind of thing, as they keep saying. Yeah.
I feel like this is, as we discussed last week, I feel like this is designed to make you like Kevin more.
It's working.
And presumably, it probably does not bode well for Kevin's future in the remaining episodes.
No. Nope. Either he's going to turn heel or he's going to get killed or something bad's going to happen anyway.
Like Tiger the Great's probably going to like kill him and it's going to motivate Takuma to take him out then.
While they're having their kind of four-way thing, and the lads are obviously a better tag team because they've done that before. Red Deathmatch shows up with a chair and a table and is like, hey, who wants to join my team?
Whoever joins my team gets this.
Gets the table.
And Orton is just like, I'll join your team. And it's like, Orton, we'll betray each other for and say, yeah, whatever, man. And it's like, don't worry, I'm actually coming. I got a plan, don't worry about this. And it's like, oh, you're coming to my side, Orton. Well, you get the table, bam, straight to the face.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, well, I wouldn't trust someone who'd betray their partner. Now, who wants to join up with Red Deathmask?
I don't know. Could have a hard bargain.
And it like initially what he's saying makes sense because he says like, okay, whoever joins with me, your two-way thing kind of thing, they'll get pounced on by the other team.
Yeah.
So, you know, it works out. People get taken out. You join my team. You get a table. But none of them are kind of like, it's like, I'm not joining with Red Deathmask. He's crazy.
No, so they all go for him. But while they're all going for Red Deathmask, they also manage to take out Billy the Kidman.
Yeah, I really like that where Takuma and Kevin are just like, yeah, come on, let's run in and get Red Deathmask. And they smack over the head with the table and then they fucking wreck Billy the Kidman. And they're just like, wait, he was with Yee, technically.
Yeah, and then they get
I know he was beating you up the last 5 minutes, but, you know.
They get their rewards of bottled water and protein powder.
Did they not open one of the boxes? Because I thought a Red Deathmask got one when he took out Odin.
Yeah.
You didn't get the chance to open it,
mind you. That's true, yes. There was one
that didn't.
Yeah, must not have done.
But he had like a gun inside.
That would have been a lot easier. It's an off button for robots. What possible use could that be?
RPG.
I did like Kevin is like, is this fucking protein powder? I'm not eating this.
So then they go up to face the gatekeeper. And as they're going, though, Odin pulls himself back up, grabs a bottle of water and follows them.
Yeah. He wasn't quite out of the game yet.
Yeah.
Like, the other guys appear to be dead. Not Red Death Mask. The guys who they show in the in the prior thing, because I was like, oh yeah, well, those guys got messed up.
That guy got suplexed in his head like into a rock. he's finished. Ricardo got like, you know, like face slammed off a cliff. So that's he's true, he's finished. His brains are all over the bottom of that valley now.
Yeah, and they come across what name did they give him?
Blackout. Like the
Blackout. Yeah.
Is it Wrecking Machine or?
They call him he's like a wrestling killing machine. It's like
killing machine.
What a thing to describe to this guy. No, he's literally a wrestling killing machine. Yes. He's actually a robot.
I think which really clues you in is the point at which his body can turn entire 180 degrees.
Yeah, on the waist, like he's an action figure or something. Yeah. Because, I mean, like, it's not unusual for like a bunch of guys to try and wrestle a dude like we've seen with Yellow Devil and just have zero effect on them. It's when he starts acting unhumanly.
Yes.
And then his eyes go red.
Yeah, and then his face gets burnt off by Odin's fireball.
Yeah, Odin runs up,
Yeah, yeah. I like the way they got use out of the crappy prizes.
Yes. And it was good enough fight that you were really happy when the robot went through the glass and started focusing on the people betting and identifying them as targets. You're like, yeah, you're going to get yours now.
Rich bastards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And your man is all like, stop it, Blackout, what are you doing? And he just gets like freaking
no, arm I am your father.
I think that guy was dead. He wasn't getting up after.
Yeah, he pretty much turned into an animation smear as he was hit.
Oh, dear.
Everyone runs through a lot. It's a tiger to great. He's like, I got this. And this pile drives that robot immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, and he does it just so that Takuma and Kevin get a look at it as well.
Because they're waiting at the golden Willy Wonka elevator to try and get away. I did like the way it didn't do it as much as the last episode where it cut between the hell in the hole and your man's date. But this one, it's kind of like he's going to see your man and it's like in hospital. And it cuts between them fighting for their lives against fucking killer androids and shit. And him going like, oh no, her father's really rich and I was bragging about my paycheck to his old wrestling boss.
Yeah, see, my brain went, because that happened before, I was like, oh, is her dad really rich? It's going to be that old white-haired man. No, it turned out he was...
oh, he's dead.
Also, he's not involved in medicine. He's involved in military robots.
Mm. Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they go back to MSG, Kevin and Takuma, but Odin returns home.
He returns home to the wheat fields of his youth.
Yes.
The best corn fields of Canada.
And he meets, what was it, Mary or something?
Catherine.
Who we never see.
No, we never see. And I can't remember whether it's his wife, his girlfriend, or his sister.
I don't think it's specified. It's just someone called Catherine. I don't know if it's a man or a woman.
He's talking dog.
The scarecrow that lives in that field. dear. But so Odin's retired now, I guess.
I assume so, yes.
It's weird the way he managed to turn him around and make him a likable character and then going like, oh, that's nice.
Yes.
It's something to fight for, man. He's wrestling to save the family farm. He had a good reason for doing what he did.
Yeah, I think it's to kind of humanize the GWM wrestlers, particularly now that we see like, oh, there's something else going on with somebody's using them to test military robots against... You think, and yes, as Miss X and Mr. X both had looks on their faces as if, like, this is an insult to wrestling.
Mm.
What are you
and
doing?
And she seems happy enough with the robot going crazy in the place. It's like, yes, that's Mr. X's problem. I'm Miss X.
Yes.
So, there's some intercompany drama maybe as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and then on to Akka, 13 Territory Inspection Department, Episode 7. The truth emerges in the night mists.
Yep.
It does.
A bunch of things confirmed.
Yep. So it looks like they are the children of the princess who is thought to have died 33 years ago.
And who did die slightly less than that ago.
Yes, about half of that amount.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, I guess, not only the main guy learning this, but like a lot of other characters kind of learning this as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Like, we kind of see that, no, you weren't sure what Mauve was trying to, like, pin down here, was trying to pin down who's on what side, all about the coup. She was trying to pin down these other rumors, the rumors she was actually investigating were about, hey, you heard about this guy, Giannonis? He's hot type all this. It's because he's fucking royalty. And she goes and gets that confirmed for herself then.
Yeah, and her thing seems to be like that. There were rumors spread about him that he's organizing or giving information to various members of the coup. He's royalty. There's all kinds of bullshit about him. She's trying to confirm what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
The royalty part is real.
Yeah, and as well as we suspected too, that Gene seems pretty unaware of anything that's going on. He seems to just be a guy who's doing his job, and you know he's getting asked to do things he doesn't quite understand. And it's like, yeah, you have no idea about this, but everyone else does know about this, and you have it's just being played for a pawn by all these different sides.
Yeah, but it tries to give him some relevance again, where Mova saying that you should have told me that. What's his name is possibly involved in the coup? The white-haired guy?
Grossler.
That Grossler is possibly going for the coup. And you didn't tell me that because you know I looked up to him. And he's like, no, that's not why I told you that. I didn't tell you that because I think he's actually not doing it.
Yeah.
And since we've seen him like being able to pick apart the one wrong fucking timestamp on a fucking thing, it's like maybe he does have some inkling as to what's going on. Or at least into people's motives to some extent.
It's probably, you know, as certain as everybody else knows what's actually going on. You know, it's something.
Yeah.
Everybody else knows something is going on, but not precisely who yes. is on what.
It's the side of the he table. Doesn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, but we also learned that Nina is answering to somebody in the royal household.
That's either the king or Quam on the phone.
Yes.
That was really
No, it's not Quam because it says, we don't need to get Quam involved in this. So that's probably the king or the king himself.
Or that guy who's convincing, who sent Maggie.
The head of the garage, wherever he is.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like, So Gene is going to go to a cake shop to get a specific kind of cake.
Oh, yeah, that's totally set up, yes.
Yeah, his sister found out from this guy, and I was like, well, I know who that guy's fucking working for now. You remember the kids. So many names to keep track of. Anyway, to get that specifically off him, on the one day the king happens to be visiting that cake shop.
Yes.
And then it's like, well, I guess you should go over to the king and have a fucking dinner.
And I'll take some photos of the two of you together.
And it's like, did the fucking king set this up or did someone else set this up? Well,
I think the king is in some way involved because he was on the phone with somebody and they're saying like, yeah, the phone's turned out pretty good. It was something in there. Now. It was a while back now, but I'm pretty sure it could be the king on the end of that phone because it would make sense that he's probably not an idiot. He sees that the next in line to the throne is Xuan from Prince Dipshit. So
like
wouldn't I try to engineer some kind of circumstances where this is brought to light, the truth comes out, actually Gene or Lotta perhaps is the next heir to the throne. I'd rather have that guy in than this fool.
Like it's potential Nino was doing that for someone else because he seemed to be really... kind of like upset with himself for doing it or whatever, but it's entirely possible that the king set it up in order to go like, oh yeah, look, he's totally my grandson. Look, here's us having lunch. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
As proof that he like it wasn't some secret kind of thing. That's definitely set up, but again, we don't know exactly by who and for what specifically.
Yeah, I'm still of the suspicion that there is no coup, that the rumor is just there to see whether or not people would be interested in starting the coup.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if it's like, hey, is anyone interested in rebelling against the king? And people are like, well, we're not planning on it, but maybe. Yeah.
I think the five head officers are interested in it. Grossler, maybe not. I feel like he's some other thing. I think it could be an inside man for somebody else. He's not doing a very good job of it. But
I say
the other four guys are definitely in on this because they have ties to all these businessmen. And they think a coup where the government was changed and they can enact whatever kind of business laws they want without we need a very royal decree would be great for our companies.
Yeah. It seems like the other head guys are all together, if not in on actually planning or seeing, putting the feelers out to see if people want to have a coup.
they certainly wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
And they are on about one like Akka has always brought peace to this country for decades now. It's going to stay that way. Maybe we should be more in charge of the country.
Yeah, yeah. That's suggesting that the coup could be like, let's actually put Akka in charge and us at the fucking very top.
So that
they could be disbanded or anything.
Yeah, I also wonder whether there's a thing about line of inheritance of the royal family being male only, because of the line about whichever country it is that Moev comes from is female dominated.
Oh, I hadn't considered that, because obviously with the prince finding out,
yes,
that
because there wouldn't be this problem if it wasn't only going to a male heir.
Yeah, I thought it was because Jean's sister was younger than the prince. So it's like, oh, I'm still the fucking oldest, so I
guess. Yes, he did, yeah.
But when he finds out, it's like, oh, but she has an older brother who's older than you. He's like, fuck, shit. It puts him into a bit of a panic, all right, that there's an older heir who obviously would have more claims to the
throne.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah,
and I liked that it dropped enough hints to it so that when it revealed it, you go, "Oh, yeah, I feel so clever for figuring this much out."
Yeah. It gives you that missing piece you didn't quite have, and it's like, ah, now that all lines up. It is pretty good. It's satisfying that.
There wasn't as much. I mean, like, there's definitely like some things dropped in this episode that were probably going to be revealed as to who was working for what later on. But a lot of this episode was kind of like just, establishing those theories that we were.
I'm still half expecting that big yellow mustache that Gene's boss is being false and he'll turn out to be another character.
I am actually the crown prince.
A woman.
Yeah.
It was me, your mother, all along.
I was never dead.
He does have lovely hair. Yeah.
He does. It's the hair and the mustache could easily both be a wig and a fake mustache.
Mm-hmm. Color contacts, to hide the blue eyes. The possibility is there.
Yeah, and actually this episode does have the bit with the king and the prince talking about it. It's like, hey, granddad, which is your favorite painting? And he's like, all of them. You know, kind of thing. It's like, hey, who's in the line for succession, kind of thing. It's like, oh, I love all my children. Like, sure you do.
Yeah, that guy with the yellow eyes still hasn't made it onto the webpage.
Yeah?
No. But he's been in two episodes so far.
That's the captain of the guard or something.
Or whatever it is. Well, who knows, because he's not on this webpage to tell me what his job is.
Well, he seems to be like someone who's higher up than Maggie.
Yeah.
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 He's up to date with... He's even got like the three guys who work for Moev, but not him.
Mm. Oh, you're one with no eyes.
Yes.
A very long fringe. Yeah, well, I feel like, you know, that's probably a guy who's been in the job for a while, and next episode will probably be about a flashback thing to when Jean's mother ran off with the other...
The other
royal courtier, wherever he was, or the royal guard, wherever he was, and the whole story about that. So maybe he might come into play along there sometime. Like maybe he's a guy who helped them get out there or cover it up.
Yeah, before they actually go into the other stuff, where I'm assuming Moev is on our side, Jean's side, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
In this episode, I was nearly thinking, it's like, is she actually the one testing out the coup? Again, some thought before, but because, again, she seems to come from... is it a matriarchy?
Matriarchy.
That's it. Yeah. And obviously everyone in charge, including the king and then the heads of Akka, all guys. So that was what I was initially thinking, until she kind of opens up to Jean about what's going on and what she knows, basically. Yeah.
Because it's done quite a good job of giving like lots of these countries a reason for wanting to have a coup.
Oh, and this country is London, as far as I can tell, isn't it?
I don't know.
But they have the tube, so I thought...
They've got bits of... But other places have tubes as well, remember.
Oh, that's true. I figured it was either London or Moscow or something.
Could be Berlin, could be Paris, could be anywhere that has a metro system.
It's the curved one of it. I thought it might be particular to a place.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. That I wasn't. That was one of the ones where I was like, I'm not sure what country this is supposed to be. Because I thought, okay. I think I thought one country, and then I saw the underground, and I was like, okay, I'm thrown a bit here.
Okay.
Anything else to add? Beyond simply saying, of course, it's the best thing currently airing, so go and watch it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to just sit and go like, wait a minute, and you rewind and just check and shit.
It's about spying, it's about kind of misdirection, it's about all that, like, spying thing, you know, or this kind of thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a lot of, I guess, kind of tense scenes of people trying to feed each other out, you know, and people getting, like, you know, getting shot up in a dark alley or then tossed in the river, you know. It's more there's a lot of
political
intrigue happening.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also it's cakes and cigarettes.
Yeah.
And filled bread.
Cakes verily and heavily involved in the plot. Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I say, it's not just window dressing. I think for some people thought, oh, all this stuff is just...
just people who like to draw food and cakes
and
such.
But no, the clue as to his... as to their lineage is in what vices they've got.
Yeah.
I've always thought of one, surely just all the cakes and things, it's with some kind of code, it has to be. Like the fact that it always, like, you know, it seemed to roll into an awful lot of these, like, high-ranking government officers in the local bakery. Like,
yeah,
it must be something.
In this episode, the baker is like, huh, it seems like Inspector Mauve isn't showing up tonight or whatever kind of thing. So he's just used to these fucking dealings in his cake shop. Or was that the bread shop? It doesn't matter anyway, but yeah.
So, the one thing which has been put to the back of the story, which was in the first few episodes, is these arsons. Mm. So interesting to see if they'll come back up after we have this flashback.
I was alerting to try and throw you off to over, like, you know, is like, you know, actually some kind of revolution being stoked here, and this is like one sign of it, or is it just something that you think along that lines? Is this an unrelated crime that's happened to be going on in the background?
Could well be an unrelated crime. And do you think they're setting up Schwan to get assassinated?
Get assassinated.
Wait, which one's Schwan?
Prince,
is it?
Well, yes. They do seem to be pretty keen to get him out of the Doha, the kind of the royal district. Because
they keep trying to push him into doing it, and he's no interest.
The last time someone left Doha, they died in mysterious circumstances, so they probably don't want that happen again. Let's say it would happen again, but it would be the perfect thing to happen. Like, you know, another timely action to rub out the next in line to the throne.
I'm wondering, but and I might be overthinking it a little, but I got to look into symbols and stuff in this show because it seems to pay off to do so based off this episode. They keep mentioning like arsons, and then they go, Gene has a lighter, which is unusual. And again, is that like a kind of thing where he likes smoking and his sister likes cakes, just like the king? So is that like going to relate the fact that he carries a thing to light fires with, it's going to tie back into someone in the royal family or something like that? Because I feel like that's not just like a red herring. I feel like that's directly related to all the plots that are interwoven, you know?
Yeah, I'll just wait and see. Because isn't where they want to go is where the arsons are taking place as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously Maggie's like, you gotta taste this sandwich bread. You gotta have the sandwich bread.
Goes to the bakery, and then the bakery burns down because, you know, someone let the loaf in the oven for too long. And
but then it'll all be delicious toast.
Yes, along with a royal prince there in the front lounge.
Yeah.
Right.
And, yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Okay, I think that's everything. The other thing I watched was the first 15 minutes of Ganso, which is on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Just because, well, I'm paying for the service, I may as well watch something on it.
Yeah, well, I watched it and I was like, boy, oh boy, those Blame and Knights of Sidonia and Agent, I wish they looked like this thing, because, boy, it's miles ahead of those in terms of CG animation.
Mm, okay. I saw that on Blame trailer and I was like, oh, it's probably got pictures of the game. You just don't ever seem to improve. It's all the same shit with these guys.
I know. Whereas this is the Tiger and Bunny guy doing this, and he's been doing
it.
And his CG stuff keeps on getting better and better that he gets involved in. So, but it is weird that it's a story near the end of Gantz with. So you think that's okay, it's for fans only, but then it removes a load of characters. to make it work better as a film.
So that people can understand, right?
Yes. So it's like, well, if it's for fans only, sure, you'd want to leave those characters in.
Hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, it looks very pretty. And the action is pretty good. And it's certainly the best Gantz anime so far. not that it's a hard thing to do, be, but there you go. Hmm. Right, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamiting the Brain. Have you got anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness this week, guys?
Well, depending on how we organise these things, it'll either be Skeleton Warriors, but our good pal Jake Burke, or it'll be Rudok and the Dweebs, but you, Brian.
What?
Yeah. You on another podcast?
Crazy.
Okay, well, I better talk about that after this. Okay, same as last week, this same episode coming up on Dynamite in the Brain, because I was away and didn't get it up, is Broly the Legendary Super Saiyan. We'll be talking all about that, so check it out. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.